were creating a world, I wouldn't mess about with butterflies and daffodils. I would have started with lasers. 8 o'clock, day one.
Well, are you excited, Stephen Graham? Because it's the All Japan Excite series. How are you doing, Stephen?
Oh, good. I see what you did there.
Yes. What's been happening in the world of Stephen Graham? Long time no talk.
Yeah. I actually put out a podcast today, as of recording time, the Super Extreme Vault, where me, Mark, and Glenn talked about some Japanese death matches. And now we're talking about some Japanese non-death matches. So that's
what's happened to the Pro Wrestling Super Show, Stephen? I haven't seen that one for a while.
We put out a show. We taped it with Will and Tim. We went 90 minutes talking top six tag team wrestlers, and only about 15 minutes recorded at the start.
So. Oh, I remember that. Oh, that would have been a good. You should need to redo that.
It was just Will making fun of me. So, yeah. But I put out the first 15 minutes, so you can check that out.
Do you want
out.
Me to give you the correct answers off the top of my head?
Yeah, sure, go for it. Does yours have Haku on the list? Because otherwise it's different than mine.
Yeah, Haku is not one of the top six tag wrestlers. I mean, Kawada.
He was on mine.
Arn Anderson.
Yeah.
Bobby Eaton.
He was up there on everyone's, yeah.
Yeah, Yatsu.
Yatsu, I think, was an honorable mention.
Yep, I mean, Jumbo. Which is in at least four great tag teams.
Me and Tim both had Tawe on our list.
Yeah, I think I'd go Jumbo over Tawe because he's just part of more great teams, including the one with Tawe.
Our argument was that, because since no one will hear this, so I'll do the argument anyways. Yeah. The argument was that Tawe felt more like a tag team wrestler.
I will say that Jumbo is a weird thing for tag wrestling because even though he was in so many great tag matches, he always feels like a singles wrestler. It's always like Hulk Hogan in a tag team, right?
Yeah. The same thing with Kawada, we felt.
That he always feels like a singles guy?
Yeah, he's more of a singles guy who's just great in tag teams, while Tawe feels like a great tag wrestler.
All right, well, if we just disqualify all Japanese people for no apparent reason, I will say that the top six tag wrestlers are Terry Funk, who's a tremendous tag wrestler, and is in one of the greatest tag teams of all time, with, of course, Dory Funk Jr., Arn Anderson, Bobby Eaton, Ricky Morton, who invented the face in the Ricky Morton role. He didn't, actually, but he perfected it.
Yeah.
Who else is there?
My number one, Dustin Rhodes.
Dustin Rhodes is your number one tag wrestler of all time.
Well, okay, he's my favorite and the one I connect with the most. He's not the best.
I mean, Rick Martel's a great tag wrestler.
That's true. That's true.
Ricky Steamboat's a great tag wrestler.
Yeah. Larry Zbyszko could be a great tag wrestler when he was at it. I don't think he was on our list either, but this was a while ago. But yeah.
I mean, kayfabe-wise, Mike Rotunda is one of the all-time greats.
So is Booker T.
How many times did Edge and Christian hold the tag belts?
Quite. Dudley's, I think, have held it more than anyone, so you can give it to Bubba.
Mm. So anyway, yeah. I think we named all of the guys who I reckon would be in concern. Is there anyone like glaring that we've not mentioned there?
Barry Windham maybe was mentioned. There's some women that Tim had on his list, like Mayuma Ozaka, people like that. So, nothing glaring.
Tully's a good tag worker.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, I don't know. If you're a good worker, I guess you're a good tag worker, but... What about Stan Lane? He was in two great tag teams. I'm surprised Will didn't push for him.
I don't think Lane wasn't on his list. I think he might have been brought up as an honorable mention.
And what about the other Midnight Express guy, Dennis Condrey?
Condrey, I think, either made Will's list or was an alternate. Because Will's big on Condrey.
Well, Stephen, I'll... while we're talking, I might consider this and give you a definitive six by the end of the show. How about that? Because it's a bit difficult to come up with off the top of your head. Okay. So, shall we get into our batch of matches this evening?
Yeah, why not?
The first one is Kawada taking on Gary Albright.
Mm-hmm. And this is a match people have told you you need to watch for a while, eh?
Yes, they have. So, do you have any comments before my first Palms point?
Is your first Palms point that Gary Albright comes out to Voodoo Child?
No, it isn't. No, it is not. So,
what the hell?
Well, I don't tend to mention things like that in the points. You know, they're straight down to business. The points, you know.
That's true. But that was just so, like, it seemed so unfitting. Like, no. Child's such a cool song, and it's fucking Gary Albright.
No, did this match not happen in All Japan?
It was All Japan.
It seemed different and weird. Like, what the hell was, like, the presentation around this match seemed odd to me.
This was taken from a commercial tape. So right. It did have the highlights at the beginning and the entrances and that kind of stuff.
And then the uber slow-mo
replay
at the end where
that's what the commercial tapes looked like.
We basically watched the entire match again.
You should see the commercial tape for 6394. There's like a 5-minute slow motion recap of all the big spots.
Okay. Bob's point.
Is that your best? Oh, too easy. You weak, pathetic fool.
So, my first Parv's point is simply this. It's more of a Parv's question, Stephen. What is Gary Albright?
What is he? Well, he was a UWF guy, right? So he had that kind of fake shoot. He was in that fake shoot promotion. He was kind of like, you know, the takedown armbar, which you saw all over this match, but I haven't really seen much of Gary Albright, but he's definitely an interesting character. I feel like he's related to someone or is part of like a famous thing. I'm going to look him up. What did you think Gary Albright was? He was obviously a person. We have to give that much credit.
Well, he is what I'd call like the worst kind of fat. As in, and now I don't like, this is not my fat shaming. I'm not like, it's perfectly fine for a wrestler to be, have this larger build. Uh-huh. But like, it looks better on some people than others. And I think there's something about Gary Albright's particular brand of fat that looks like a bit lame. You know what I mean by that?
Oh, yeah. He's very awkward looking. Just interestingly, okay, looking at this, first of all, he started in Stampede in 88.
Mm-hmm.
He actually married Offa's daughter.
Okay, so he married the Samoan.
Yeah, and he was a big-time amateur wrestling champion, Montana State champion in 81, Big 8 champion, Big 8 All-Academic, NCWA runner-up, freestyle U.S. team member from 81 to 84. So 1981 World Greco-Roman Elite Champion. So he had a distinguished amateur career, did Stampede, then went to UWFI and then to All Japan.
So what happened to him if he had all those like, why does he look like this?
I don't know. He doesn't look good, though. He has the amateur tights, though.
Yeah, he does. He looked like a, I don't know. Yeah, it's just weird. It's just a weird thing because you're. When I think of amateur guys, obviously like, well, there's Kurt Angle, Jack Briscoe, the Steiners. They're all like in pretty good shape generally.
Yeah.
Bob Roop to a lesser extent. Who's that really boring guy from AWA? Brad Rannigans.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Backlund to an extent had a amateur background. Like, they tend not to have this build, this kind of bigger, Like, he was getting on to be almost kind of, you know, not like not Earthquake level, but like he was pretty big. He was almost like not too much smaller than a Vader, I would say.
Yeah. Well, he did team as one of the Sings with Mahak Singh, a Bastion Booger in Stampede. So he might have taken on some weight to be Bastion Booger's partner.
Interesting. Okay. So that was that. And my second point, and my final point, Steve, and I don't have a huge amount of notes for this match, is that honestly, I didn't really notice many shoot style elements to this match. I mean, it really just seemed like a normal match to me. Okay, there was a bit more kind of limb work than you might, like, it was a bit more map based than you might usually see, but there was still a kind of fair share of strikes and suplexes and so on. And I don't think I've seen any suplexes in the shoot style matches that I've watched.
Have you watched UWFI?
I don't think so.
Because UWFI was a lot more pro wrestling based.
Was it really? Okay. Yeah. So what they actually did, throws and...
They did throws. They did, like, Vader wrestled there. Tiger Mask wrestled there.
Oh, right. Okay.
So it was a little, you know, they pretended to be real and did, like, you know, they did knockouts and they did kicks and throws and stuff and submission victories, but they still had the element of pro wrestling.
It might be a good entry level one for me to try to get into it, because
that might be a good starting point.
I have not been the biggest fan of the stuff I've seen so far. So
me neither. I'm with you. Well, I need to figure out Volkan because I'm really lost with him.
Yeah, I've seen some of that stuff as well, and it's just I don't know. It's a bit too far removed from what, you know, what I'm into. And then some of the other stuff, I have seen some UWFI stuff, but it was like in 1990. And it bored me to tears. Oh, it was so boring. So, you know. But that was literally just like two guys lying on the mat for half an hour.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Maybe watch Vader's UWF. That might get you.
Yes, possible. So, yeah, I didn't really... But, based on that, I didn't really see this as being too much different from any other match.
I felt like there was more of an intensity. And it kind of felt like... like it was Kawada's All Japan style versus Albright's UWF style. Like, Albright's moves were throws and takedowns and going for the leg and going for the armbar and stuff like that, while Kawada was wrestling kind of his All Japan style, but with like more focus on kicks and suplexes. So it kind of felt like it didn't feel like you know, an MMA type of match, but it kind of felt more like early Pride, where it was like two styles going at it, you know.
Yeah, okay, all right, I can sort of see that. But I didn't like, all Gary Albright looked like to me was just kind of like an awkward wrestler, just he just seemed a bit, you know, a bit lumbering and didn't seem to execute anything particularly well.
Oh, that float over belly to belly suplex was very beautiful that he did.
You liked that, did you?
Oh, I did. I thought it was good. And then he went right into the arm lock. I thought that looked really good.
Well, okay. Fair enough.
I thought Kawada's selling of that was really good. And definitely the crowd was into this. And it did feel pretty intense, didn't it, to you? Or no?
No. Honestly, it didn't really. It didn't feel any more intense than Kawada versus anyone else that I've seen, like Kawada versus any other random guy. This kind of fell a bit flat with me, Steve, and I don't have too many other notes. It's just I didn't see much special about the match at all. It just seemed like a match. I mean, the crowd were definitely into it, and they popped big for the finish, which was effectively an armbar.
I wasn't
overawed or anything. Didn't really come away. I mean, don't really understand why everybody was saying, well, you have to watch this one.
Well, it's because Gary Albright's pretty awful, and this was a good match. I think
Oh, you see, I came away from it thinking, oh, Gary Albright's not very good.
No, Albright's awful, right? And he had this good of a match. I think the Kawada carry job.
So it's meant to be a good match, is it? Because, I mean, my rating was literally 2.5. I just didn't, like, I was like, what is this? Just a normal TV match.
Okay. Well, I had 4 stars because I thought it was a pretty intense battle and a nice contrast of styles. And I seem to be on par with most people. So I mean, this is a classic part of being out to lunch situation here.
Well, I'm looking at people's comments now. Yeah, I can see lots of paragraphs by our friend John D. Williams. Okay, well, you guys can read all of that. For me, I have no idea why we even watched this match, Stephen. So should we move on?
Sure. But I thought it was good.
This is just like a WF challenge match or something. It was just like, what the fuck?
What? Did you watch the full 20 minutes or whatever?
Yeah, I watched the whole thing, yeah. Okay. I honestly didn't really see what the fuss is about. I mean, Carla was perfectly fine. But I don't see it as this great carry job or anything like that.
Okay. You know,
because, like, people were bringing this up when I was talking about, you know, Flair versus Nikita and things like that. I mean, and it, like, I don't see it as a billion million miles away from those sorts of deals where...
I thought it was right up there with those, so...
Well, I mean, I'm not particularly big on a Flair versus Nikita either. Well, exactly. So, you know, so...
I think it's probably better than Flair and Nikita, so...
So, there we go. I don't know. I mean, at least Nikita's got some muscles, so I guess that can carry something. Anyway, let's move on. Any more Gary Albright matches?
This is it. Sorry, this will be the lone appearance of Gary Albright.
Is that the lowest rating I've ever given to a match on the All Japan Exhibition?
Yes, it is, by far.
Christ. Well, that puts it on par with the El Dandy versus Azteca, doesn't it? That's the other match I gave to
him. Out to lunch on. I wish Chad was here for this episode.
What, is he big on Kawada versus Gary Albright?
He gave it 4 stars at least.
I'm going to move on because I just that's another one of those.
Your hate mail can go to Parv on Pro Wrestling Only. So
I never get any hate mail. Everybody else gets hate mail. I never get any. But people just leave it on obscure threads on Pro Wrestling Only. Anyway, let's move on. Because it's Akira Taue now taking on Dr. Death Steve Williams. And do you have any initial kind of pre-match notes before I get to the first Bob's point?
Just that this is the finals of the Championship Carnival.
What's the date on it? We should give the dates out for the
game. Oh, yeah, sorry. This is April 20th, 1996.
And that Albright match was?
October 25th, 95. So.
Yeah. Where's Kobashi, by the way? He seems to be missing this week.
Yeah, there's no Kobashi on the... It just how it worked out. We lose him as Misawa's partner, so he kind of... disappears here but I think he's back next show.
Bob's point.
Is that your best? Oh, too easy. You weak, pathetic fool.
Such a pity. So I got into this groove of doing the first point as a question, Stephen. So you ready for the question?
Yeah, sure.
What is a hoss?
If you're an Oklahomian, is that how you say that? It's apparently a tough guy, I think.
Williams and Taue seem to be a battle of hosses here, both of them.
Yeah, that's probably fair. Two big tough guys is a hoss battle. Jim Ross, Charles on Pro Wrestling Only, he made a comment in the thread for this match about how he would have loved Jim Ross calling this match. And I can assume he would have said Hoss a lot of times.
If Jim Ross was calling this match, he would have been in buckets of his own.
Careful.
I think he would have been so excited. And if Bill Watts was around to see Steve Williams in Japan here, he would have been just so excited. They both would have just been losing their shit over this, because both of those guys always had massive hard-ons for Steve Williams for some reason.
And this is like, in All Japan, Steve Williams is finally like what Jim Ross and Bill Watts like act like Steve Williams is.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. He finally... I mean, to be fair, in Mid-South, he does have moments where he is kind of at least effective in this role.
Some of it in Houston, too, on that the NWA Classics.
Well, when we talked about this before, he's perfectly fine in 85 and 86, and then isn't for the next, like, 5 years, and then starts becoming, like, really quite good again. So... anyway, I thought this was quite interesting to see Tawe in his favourite tournament, the Champions Carnival.
Yeah.
But Williams took a huge amount of this match, didn't he? This is my second point. Williams takes a huge amount of the match. Tawe is the babyface, clearly, if you listen to the crowd reaction. And structurally, if you look at the structure of the match, he's the babyface.
He's the underdog babyface.
He is... Yes, I mean, Williams is dishing out punishment and bombs and bombs and bombs and bombs. And I think Tawe does pretty well in this underdog role.
Yeah, and I thought this match actually had one of my favorite hope spots I think I've ever seen, where Tawe is just thrown to the floor and, like, he slams the mat, he rushes in and attacks, and he comes at him for a few minutes and then gets outmatched again. But he keeps fighting back. Like, he does such a good job in this match of getting, you know, destroyed, but still showing fire and still, like, looking like he had a chance throughout. And this was, like, so North American, this match. Like,
It really was. You're right about that, yeah.
It's very strange. Like, usually it's a little more back and forth, and it's building, you know, in different ways. But this was... Tawe, the underdog, getting destroyed by Williams and just keep coming back, valiantly fighting back, which we don't usually see.
A little bit of shine, massive heat sequence, comeback. That was basically the structure of the match. And that's a perfectly fine structure. I like that structure. I mean, it's the structure of about 95% of American matches ever. So,
yeah.
But there's a reason for that, because it kind of makes sense as a narrative. So... And Tawe in that particular role worked surprisingly well. And this is one of those weird things that it's hard, like, I sometimes find it hard to understand the dynamics of the crowd. Mm-hmm. Because here, he was clearly their favourite, they were cheering him. But then, like, in a couple of weeks when he's against Misawa, they're cheering Misawa again. So it's like, okay... But if you ask an average guy in the crowd, so it's hard. Like, I've often wondered what the average Japanese fan, you know, were they Tawe fans and Misawa fans, or did the same people who were, you know, cheering for him here, or cheering against him, in a different context?
My theory's always been is the Japanese crowds in All Japan get behind whoever the underdog is in the match.
Yeah, that does seem to be a trend. We've seen it. In fact, weren't they even cheering Kobashi against Misawa before?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So, and also a neat thing about this one. This was kind of like the reverse of the finals of the Carnival from 95. Like, Tawe destroyed Misawa in the 95 finals, right? Only to lose. And this one was Williams destroying Tawe, only to lose.
That's a good point. Absolutely a good point. Yeah. And, Williams still looks good. Tawe is look good here. I do have a third point.
Oh, okay.
Which is that there's kind of an uncoordination and clumsiness in this match that seems, in a weird way, to add to the brutality. I mean, at one point, for example, Williams hits this back suplex that looks like it might have legitimately killed Tawe. Like, they're just, yeah. Like, the way it just lands it on the neck, and it's just like, oh. In fact, there's a lot of these on this footage in general, where they hit a backdrop suplex, and the moment of impact takes them over their own neck. I just don't understand how those guys like didn't kill themselves.
Well, Misawa did die.
Well, I did say that and then immediately realized Misawa died. But you know what I mean, right?
Yeah,
it's kind of like, how do they do that night after night?
Yeah, well,
it's a really sick looking bump that backdrop.
It is. I don't think it did them any favors. That's for sure.
But Williams is in general is the most sick looking backdrop.
Oh yeah, suplex.
Because it's just like, ugh. So
I wouldn't want to wrestle him. They had a good point in that one, too. So they were teasing the choke slam off the apron again. But when he finally hits it, it's not like a choke slam off the apron. It's like a choke throw off the apron. It's like he shoves him, and then he falls back. It was really weird, but it looked like – I don't know if it looked good, but it did look like it hurt, at least. It was interesting. Yeah.
And my fourth point is that there was one cool spot in this match, which again had this uncoordinated, clumsy looking, when Williams was going for like a power bomb or like a tiger driver or something, and Tawei's body weight was too much for whatever he was going for, and he basically landed on top of Williams like a sack of potatoes. And again, that kind of like clumsy quality makes things look more real and painful somehow.
Yeah,
it's just like if somebody's landing on you clumsily like that, it's like, oh god, that's gonna hurt, you know. So something about that aspect of Tawei was adding to this match for me between these two kind of big dudes. So
that's what one of the things I love about Tawei is that he is that kind of, he does have that quality in a lot of his matches, which makes it feel I don't know, more realistic or more sports like or whatever, but he has that quality in the matches I really like.
So yeah, any other comments before we get to the rating?
Yeah, just you know, he wins with the choke slam. He gets the big victory last year. Oh, unlike last year, so he gets carried off on the shoulders of everyone else, like Bret Hart at WrestleMania 10, which is good. And then they show an instant replay where they say finishing blow on the screen, and it's a slow motion of the choke slam. So that was neat too. But yeah, the crowd was really into Tawei finally winning this tournament, and it was definitely a nice thing to see. Because really, all of the besides the Albright match, I didn't know who won any of these matches. So there, kind of a lot of these finishes were surprises to me, and it was nice seeing Tawei get a nice moment like that, winning the Champion Carnival.
I wonder why the Champions Carnival was such a Tawei tournament. He was all over it for 2 years running here in 95 and 96. It was just one of those things, I guess. So he's like clearly at this point the number four guy in the company, number three guy in the company. I mean,
he's moving up.
Is he even above Kawada at this point, or above Kobashi possibly?
Maybe. I think he actually gets the title sometime in 96. So I think they were moving him towards that upper spot.
Yeah, increasingly giant barber like as well in his looks. So maybe Barber had this idea of like he's got his ace and he's got his giant barber, and he was trying to find a replacement for himself, you know.
It is really interesting. Like, you do have Baba and Tawei, you have Tenryu and Kawada, you have Jumbo and Misawa.
Mm-hmm.
So you do have a kind of that 80s quality a lot there.
Yeah, I do think that he had a very set structure in his mind of who he wanted. Where is Stan Hansen, by the way? Is he still knocking about?
Yeah, we get him on the next show.
Right, okay. I was just wondering where he was. And because I'd have thought that he would have been a natural partner for...
Well, he's getting pretty old in 96.
He would have been a natural partner of Steve Williams, though, I'd have thought. Can you imagine those two together?
Yeah, you know. I think he was really beaten down.
Was he winding down,
Hansen? Yeah.
So, I mean, Williams is your Hansen.
Yeah.
Johnny Ace is... Hansen's partner,
whoever,
whether it's Gordy or DiBiase or whoever it is at the time.
Yeah,
you know,
who's Kobashi?
Kobashi is Tenryu.
I thought that was Kawada.
Well, it depends. Which, I mean, okay, so you have Jumbo and Tenryu as tag partners.
Okay, yeah.
And then when Tenryu turns, so I guess it depends which...
Kobashi is Yatsu.
So Kobashi would be Yatsu, yeah.
There we go.
If you're doing the 1989 comparison.
Yeah, that works.
There's always, like, the number one ace and his best buddy. And then, like, there is... Yeah, okay. Let's you get the idea, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I went 4 stars on that. I thought it was a pretty good match.
Yeah, I went 4.25, just because I thought it was better than the last match by quite a bit. And but
it was better than the last match by quite a bit, so which translates into 0.25 star.
Yeah,
I think you'll find it was better than the last match by quite a bit, and the gap between 2.5 and 4 reflects that gap quite nicely. So I am consistent on my ratings. let's move on, because now it is the Holy Demon Army.
Yeah.
Kawada and Tawe. Dangerous K and...
Dynamic T.
Dynamic T. Taking on Akiyama and Misawa. Now, any little notes before I get to the first point?
No, just the debut of Misawa's new partner for us, which is... you know, this is his third partner he's on to in this show.
So what happened? Why not Kobashi anymore? Is Kobashi too big for his boots now? So?
I think Kobashi's too big, and he's now moving on to his own thing. And he needed to find a new young upstart to team with.
Okay. Well, I'll get on to my first Pav's point. Pav's point.
Is that your best? Oh, too easy. You weak, pathetic fool. Such a
pity. Which is that Akiyama is extremely fresh-faced here. And feels like a genuine burst of energy. Adding him to the mix. Like, he's not only fresh-faced, but seems how, like, he's got something to prove as well. Now, this is going to sound like an absolutely absurd comparison point. But this guy is fresh in my mind. He's almost like a Japanese Marcus Alexander Bagwell circa 1992. By which I mean not in terms of his ring skills, obviously, okay, but in terms of that having, like, you know, Bagwell in 92 has got that real kind of rookie, wet behind the ears vibe, you know?
Yeah.
And I think Akiyama's got that kind of vibe to him, you know? I mean, I'm sure he's probably been wrestling longer than Bagwell was.
Akiyama debuted in 92.
Right. So I had a feeling that he'd have had a few years under his belt, but adding him to this mix of guys gives him that kind of rookie vibe, you know?
Oh yeah. I wrote Akiyama, the young upstart, in my notes. So,
yeah. And, I thought his execution was absolutely tremendous during this match. Like, absolutely excellent in everything he did. Great at selling, great at taking an ass kicking, great at those suplex variations that he did. He just looked fantastic, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. This was clearly a match, I think, that was made to put over Akiyama as kind of the next new star to come around. Like, I think they went out of their way to make him look great in this match.
He really did look great as well. And I don't know, like, he kind of had a, how would you explain, because he works a little bit differently from the other guys. I think he reminded me, this is okay, tell me if I'm mad, but the way that he executed certain moves reminded me a little bit of Kurt Hennig in a way.
In what way?
In the way that, okay, Kurt Hennig is springy, okay?
Okay.
He's springy, and the way that he does, like, a fisherman suplex, say, the perfect plex, and he bridges his back perfectly, and the way that he does things looks perfect. Not even trying to pun there.
Yeah.
And I thought that Akiyama had something of that in him.
Yeah, kind of that natural athlete.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, I can see that, because especially Kurt Hennig in the AWA as a babyface, this kind of felt similar for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So Even a Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle, okay. Now, I'm not, again, nothing to do with, like, how good they are as wrestlers. I'm just talking about the way they look when they do stuff, you know. Angle would be another guy who's got that kind of natural athleticism to everything that he does.
Yeah.
But not lightweight either.
He's not
a lightweight guy. Akiyama, extremely impressive looking. That was my first point. My second point was literally, I've just written head drops. Jesus Christ. Masawa landed on his neck, basically, from one of his... Kawada did one of those backdrop suplexes.
Yeah, that was the worst looking one, I think, from the entire footage.
Bloody hell. Like, he break his neck there. It's like his... It was... I was thinking, and I might even go back and do this, of pausing the point of impact and trying to get that as the front cover for this, because, like... Honestly, I reckon his neck must have been at a 45 degree angle at one point.
Oh yeah, that was very brutal to watch. That was especially when you know what happens to him in the end. But that one looked, and we've seen some brutal looking suplexes from Dr. Death on previous shows and stuff, but this one looked bad. Looked really bad for him.
Why do they do so many backdrop suplexes? That's a move. That's a real. If I was to say the number one All Japan move. Is the backdrop suplex. They really dish those out. Like, all the way from, like, Jumbo in 85 to now. That is the big All Japan move, I would say.
Yeah. It's so, like... It seems unnecessary, really.
I don't know. I mean, then again, I wouldn't want them to not do them. So, from a selfish point of view.
Yeah.
I'm kind of quite, like, you know, just ups the ante of things. But that was a really sick one. So
yeah.
There we are.
Yeah.
I'm glad you knew exactly the one I was talking about.
Oh yeah,
about as
I
well.
Did for sure.
Right, I have two more points, but neither of them are particularly substantial. So why don't I pause for you to give your kind of notes on this?
Yeah. So as you were saying, Akiyama just adds a new element. Like when Kobashi first teamed with Misawa, he felt like fresh and. You know, he was adding this extra energy and fire to the matches. And Akiyama, you know, he ups that as well. It just adds a new, whole new element to this tag feud that we've been seeing for years now, really. And it was nice. And he seems like he's only he started in 92 and this is 96. And look how good he is. It's ridiculous to think about. And definitely at the end, he was... Like, that was a hell of a fire and finishing sequence by Akiyama. Do you want to talk about the finish now or go through your points?
Well, I mean, my third point very quickly is that if you are Akiyama, do not slap Akira Taue in the face. Did you see that moment?
Oh, yeah.
I love those sometimes when it's just that look of, like, what did you just do?
It seemed like he was doing so well, he got a little overconfident. And then he paid for that big time.
I love those moments. It's like, and that was like, it's actually quite nice to see Taue have like come to the, like once upon a time, that would have been Taue slapping Jumbo.
Yeah.
And now Taue is like one of those older heads. It's like, you don't slap me in the face like that. So
yeah.
I just thought that was a beautiful moment. And then my fourth point, very simply, Stephen, and this is one I said to you in the Facebook chat at the time, Kawada is a bully. He's
yeah.
a nasty bully. And I don't condone bullying, Stephen.
Oh, no.
But, God, he gives, they really kick the shit out of Akiyama at points in this match.
Yeah. So. Their team, the Holy, I know everyone. Has talked about how great they are, but they're just so, so good when they get someone and they just start destroying him. It's just, and Kawada, you know, it's so amazing because, like, he's such a heel in this match. And then you'll watch another match and he's such a great babyface. Like, in that Albright match, he was more of a babyface in that one. He's getting the crowd on his side. And here he's just an awful, awful bully, as you said. And, he's so good. Yeah, I love watching him. And I was completely shocked by this finish. I don't know about you.
Yeah, very, very surprising finish. I mean, if you don't know, spoilers, Akiyama gets a huge pinfall win over Kawada, who is not the person you expect to be pinned, really.
No.
I wonder if that also goes to the Taue push at around this time, because he just won the Champions Carnival, and now it's Kawada taking the pinfall here. So, yeah. Interesting to think about.
This was, you know, this was a Akiyama just going over established star, like, out of nowhere. This kind of felt like Misawa beating Jumbo, like, obviously to a lesser degree, but it had that feeling.
Well, it's huge, isn't it? It's, do you remember when Taue got the pinfall in that match?
Oh, yeah,
He was still tagging with Jumbo. It was a bit like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Barber still sticking to his ways, you know. It's just it's interesting to see it play out over, you know, a length of time, that he got, like, when he's establishing a star, step one, get a pinfall in a tag match, a surprise pinfall.
He's such a good booker, right? Like,
well, he's a very consistent booker.
Yeah.
I don't think he's perfect, but when it comes to these sorts of things, he is at least consistent in. Like, if you were a fan of this promotion over a certain amount of time, it would certainly raise your eyebrows and be like, oh, wow, this is one to watch. He's just got a pinfall on Kawada, you know? So
yeah, it wouldn't be like the WWE where someone would have a win like this and you know in 4 months they'd be not on pay-per-view, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, wins and losses mean something
in
this promotion.
Yeah, for sure.
Whereas they do not in modern WWE. I mean, I would say on that subject, like, Vince used to be good at that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, if Coco Beware got a pinfall over Mr. Perfect, you'd be like, oh, wow. Like, that's a jump up the card.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have understood that at that time.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you? But it seems like over time that sense of hierarchy and sense of wins and losses meaning something have been lost. I think it goes to the destruction of the BS finish. Like, people thinking every match should end with a pinfall or a clean finish.
Mm. That and big matches on TV. I blame those a lot too.
And every star and every match having to be star versus star.
Yeah, yeah. The people talk about the Monday Night Wars because they were such a big era, but they did so much damage to wrestling, I think. Not to sound like an old curmudgeon, but they did a lot of damage.
I don't know. Like, somebody should tell WWE that the Monday Night Wars ended, and so you don't have to act. You know, there's no point in loading up Raw and having every match be star versus star, because who are you going against?
Yeah, and they're not getting paid by like ad rates or anything. They have a flat rate for like 2 or 3 years. They just need decent ratings and. Which they're not. They're having horrible ratings right now, so.
It makes no sense to me. No. But then again, I don't really watch, so I'm just going on whenever it was I last watched a WWE show. So, okay, let's move on. Oh, no, wait, before that, what about the star rating here? I went with 4.5.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was a terrific match.
I had it 4.25. I liked it quite a lot, too. But I wasn't enamored with it, which I have to be for 4.5.
So you thought this was on par with Taue Williams?
Yeah, yeah, I did.
Okay, but you sounded enamored with Taue Williams, whereas you're not enamored here. So
I'm not as, you know, these aren't great. I don't know how to describe it, but 4.25, that's quite the. I find I give out more 4.25 and 4-star matches than I do higher. Once it gets to 4.5, I think it has to be a lot more elite. So there's a lot, like a broader range for 4.25 than there is for 4.5.
Yeah. So I did think this was a very, very good match. And Akiyama had just a great performance at this. Like, I'd imagine this would be his career performance at this point.
Yeah. I think so.
It was a breakout star making performance. And to be fair, Taue and Kawada really sold his stuff, didn't they?
Oh, they had to. They really tried to make him look good here. the best they could. They were selling him, and they were, you know, giving him enough, but also, you know, making him take enough that everything looked good. Yeah, this was obviously made to look Akiyama the star. So Tale and Kawada really did that for sure.
All right, well, let's go to our fourth and final match then, and it's Akiyama and Misawa again, but this time they're taking on the beastly duo of Dr. Death Steve Williams and Johnny Ace. Now, I have very few notes for this match, Stephen.
Me as well.
Bob's points.
Is that your best? Oh, too easy. You weak, pathetic fool. Such a
pity. My first pass point is simply this. Is it me, or is Misawa starting to look a bit old in the face? I think he's starting to look a bit more grizzled around this time, and a bit more kind of, definitely seems to have aged since we started watching this stuff.
Well, it's been 6 years.
Yeah, do you see what I mean? Like, if you look at his...
Yeah, he's not as fresh-faced as he was when we first started watching.
Seems to be showing signs of age, anyway. Not necessarily in his work, just in his facial features. So
yeah.
That was the first thing that I had to note. The second pass point is a hell of a lot of bombs in this match.
Yeah.
And a huge amount of head dropping. I mean, we've mentioned it already, but Jesus Christ.
And there were, as I wrote in my notes, many awkward bombs. Like, you were talking about it earlier with Tawe Williams, but this was here too. They were just, like, they weren't super crisp. They were just... They were there, and they looked deadly, and they weren't like, I don't know, they weren't like wrestlers who execute everything perfectly. I felt like it was a little off, but it looked deadly.
The only thing the match was missing was a Steiner brother, really.
Yeah. Well, we did get a Doomsday device.
We did get a Doomsday device, yeah. Maybe they should have brought in Scott Steiner. Did they ever try? They worked the New Japan.
He was a New Japan guy.
The signers worked New Japan, didn't they?
Yeah.
I reckon they would have fit right in, you know.
Oh, yeah. But then we would have got, like, Williams Gordy versus the Steiners again. And
Well, I've just watched one of their matches. Not on one of the big boys play. So not not one of my favorites. Yes. Okay. I didn't have much else to note. Did you have anything else you wanted to mention before we get to the ratings and things?
Yeah, the one thing I haven't seen a lot of Johnny Ace outside the NWA and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But he has a lot of really good offense. Like, that Ace Crusher looks great. His power bomb looked really good. He had a lot of really good finishing type moves out there. It was kind of crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I'd made the comparison before, but he reminds me a little bit of like a better Dan Spivey. Like, because Dan Spivey's got a lot of good offense, that's, you know, true. But Dan Spivey's sloppy as hell. Whereas I think, and dangerous to the point where he's dangerous. Whereas I think Johnny Ace, while still probably quite dangerous, head drops, etc., is just better, and his stuff looks cooler.
Yeah, and that Ace Crusher, yeah. like this was 96, and he was doing that. He was doing it before then. Like, the Diamond Cutter and the Stone Cold Stunner were both, you know, takeoffs of that, and they were the two biggest moves in the late 90s during, like, the hottest era of wrestling in America. So I think he deserves a lot of credit for that, because that, you know. I don't know if Steve Austin would have been as big without the Stunner. DDP definitely wouldn't have been as big without the Diamond Cutter.
Can we talk about that move for a second? Because, yes, it was like both of those guys had it as a big move. Now, that's basically a glorified jawbreaker, isn't it? The Stone Cold Stunner. Is it that painful? Like, I've always thought, like, why is the Stunner so deadly?
Like, I kind of think the Stunner just looks like someone is slowly bending you over, and then you stop bending over. Like you barely just you like you bend if you can bend, you know, to a perpendicular angle, then then you can take a stutter. Like it doesn't look that deadly at all.
But what does it hurt? Like the
I don't know. I guess it's supposed to knock you out. So I guess it's supposed to like it's supposed to be blunt force on the chin to knock you out.
Bottom of the chin. See, like a DDT it seems to me like it would be a lot more painful.
Yeah.
Or like a pile driver or anything like that, you know.
Yeah, and it always confused me when Austin would like get in a sleeper and then do that drop down where the heads would ram into each other, because that always looks more deadly to me. But the stunner, you know, with the kick and the stuff, it just it looked cool, even if it, you know, doesn't look deadly. Like John Cena has one of the most over finishers in wrestling, and it's basically just a like a fireman's carry. So
yeah, that's true actually. Yeah. yeah. Interesting though. Yeah.
Look at the rock bottom. It was just an elbow. Or not the rock bottom, but the people's elbow was just an elbow drop, and it was so over. So
it was business exposing. I'm joking. I'm joking. See if I die. Okay. So I thought Akiyama impressed the hell out of me again here. Really looked very good. Williams and Ace were sufficiently dominant as the foreign menace. Masawa took his fair share of punishment, head drops, etc. But this, for me, seemed to lack a bit of psychology, I thought. I mean, the finishing stretch was pretty hot, but a lot of this was just a bomb fest, I thought.
Yeah, I saw on Pro Wrestling Only, there was a lot of praise for this match. People, you know, anywhere from 4 stars, 4.5 stars and stuff like that. I wasn't too into this. Like, I felt... Like you were saying, there it was lacking something, for sure, and it just felt like a lot of stuff happening with not as much reason, especially compared to the last one. So, I wasn't super high on this one.
No, and I mean, I tend to judge matches like these against my 4.5-star Steiner Brother Affairs, which I do like, and. You know, I don't know if the action here was like there were an awful lot of very sick looking head bumps and things, but I don't really know what story was happening here.
Well, we did get Akiyama with another shocking win, so
yes, that's true. Yeah, there is that weird thing at the end of the match where Doc is out of the ring and it's Johnny Ace kind of like. Going out alone for a while. I don't know. I gave the match 3.75.
Me too.
I thought that was about right for it. So
yeah.
Oh, we were the same there.
Yeah,
Okay. Well, there we are. Yeah. First of all, let's do our awards.
Okay.
And then I will give you my. Top six tag wrestlers, which I still haven't come up with.
Oh, okay. So, what was your match of the night?
It was the tag match. It was the third match that we looked at. Holy Demon Army versus Akiyama and Misawa.
Okay, I went with Williams Chawe. Just a bit better, but yeah.
Okay.
That.
Yeah.
And what about your spot of the show?
My spot of the night was the backdrop suplex by Kawada on Misawa, where his neck was at about a 45-degree angle.
Mm-hmm.
Ridiculously sick spot. So.
Yeah. That was... I don't know. I feel like I don't want to give points to that because
you don't want to commend that sort of death-defying kind of...
Yeah. I feel like it was too much... Maybe.
If you're ruling that for being dangerous or whatever, I would have to go with either Akiyama slapping Tawe in the face, or Tawe landing on top of Williams when the weight was too much on the power bomb. One of those two, probably.
Yeah, I think I want to go with the weird Taue choke slam to the floor on Williams, where he kind of threw him halfway
across. The choke throw.
The choke throw, which he went really, really far on. And then I go with that. It just, it felt, because we've seen that spot a lot now, and this one felt, it felt interesting to me. But this footage was a little lackluster compared to what we're used to, so.
Okay. What other awards did we do?
We do our top four workers of the show.
Okay. Well, number one is Akiyama. For me.
I was going to say Kawada. And I think I'm going to stick with it.
Number one for you is Kawada.
Then okay. Akiyama.
All right. Well, my number one was Akiyama. Number two was Taue.
Taue is three.
Number three, Williams, probably. And number four, Kawada.
I'm going to go number four with Misawa. I thought he kind of held everything together in those tag matches. A little understated, but he had kind of that veteran presence in those matches.
It's just another one of those tag things where he's kind of out of focus and lets his partner take the limelight, which he's done an awful lot in the tag matches. To the point where I'm just...
Oh, that was my fifth. I don't need a fifth, so I don't need to say Misawa.
I'm starting to think that's his de facto mode, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of take a back seat in the tag matches.
I think the purpose of Misawa in tag matches is to build stars.
To give a rub.
Yeah.
A rub, basically, yeah.
Because he built up Kawada, and then he moved on. He built up Kobashi, now he's moving on. Now he's building up Akiyama. So it's kind of a really clever booking device of putting the young upstart with your ace, and then once the young upstart gets big enough, you move on to a new young upstart. So, kind of like that.
Okay. What did we do? Any other awards?
No, that's it.
That's about it. Okay. So, while I'm still compiling these tag workers, Steve, why don't you give me your six that you did on the show?
Oh boy. Okay.
I know number six was Haku.
Yeah. So a little caveat before I do is that when I do these lists, I know kind of the ones that other people are going to pick. So I'll often leave them off so that we can have more people to talk about. And I kind of go with more of my favorites because other people are going to, you know, we're going to talk about certain people. So I kind of leave them off.
You don't want to go for like bog standard choices, basically.
Yeah, I want to have a little more variety. And then Will gets mad and makes fun of me. And that's generally how the shows go. But I had Haku, number six. You know, he had the Faces of Fear. He had this one of my favorite matches ever is the 1989 Survivor Series main event. Where it's the Heenan family versus the Ultimate Warriors. And in that match, Haku and Arn Anderson look like the greatest tag team of all time.
they do. In fact, they really... that's one of the Arn's career great performances, I would say.
Oh, yeah.
And one of Bobby Heenan's.
Oh, yeah.
He's great in that match. And one of Haku is great. In fact, Haku, if you want to talk about Haku in a tag team, him with Andre, I mean, he carried that team so... Like, how much did he carry his end there? Because Andre could barely move at that point.
Yeah.
And Haku does, like, 99% of the... Basically, he's 2-on-1.
Yeah. And they had some really good matches with Demolition and the Rockers and stuff. So, yeah. Haku should get a lot of credit.
I don't know if I want to say really good and Demolition in the same sentence. I will say, though... Haku and the Islanders.
Oh, yeah. There's another spot that, brought up. So a lot of really good tag stuff with Haku. Plus, before, we don't really have footage of it, but he was teaming up with, like Phil LaFon and stuff like that in Puerto Rico and Montreal, early in his career too. So a lot of tag experience with Haku. Then I had, someone that, assume you hate, well, maybe not Jacques Rougeau.
I don't hate Jacques Rougeau. He's got perfectly good character work, I would say.
I love the Quebecers. I love the Fabulous Rougeau brothers. And have you ever seen the Rougeaus in Quebec versus the Garvins, that feud?
No.
Oh, that's that's like an all-time great feud. Most of it's on YouTube.
Who are they against?
Ron and Jimmy Garvin.
Ron Garvin and Jimmy Garvin. Garvin tagging. Oh, interesting.
As heels in Montreal versus the Rougeaus.
Is Ron Garvin as stiff as ever?
Oh, yeah. It's this bloody epic feud that more people...
Well, I can't even picture that. I'm gonna have to watch that because I
like
love...
It's 382, something like that. Yeah, really great. Big stuff.
Is Jimmy Garvin still saying yeah, yeah, yeah when he flies ahead?
I don't think. It's before Jimmy Garvin sucked. who else? I had Dustin Rhodes number one.
That's a very small window of time.
Arn Anderson, I think, was number two. I had Tawe. And I don't know who else I had, to be honest. Can't remember.
You can't remember your number one?
Oh, I had Dustin Rhodes number one.
Oh, right, okay.
Like, he made a great tag team with whoever he tagged with. Whether it was Steamboat, Barry Windham, Booker T, his brother Cody Rhodes. Great face in peril, great hot tag. I think he's tremendous. You know, I had Arn there, and I had Tawe. But I can't remember the other one I had. Oh, Masafuchi.
Right, yeah, okay.
I love Masafuchi teaming with Jumbo and stuff like that. And also teaming with Kawada later on as just like the Arn Anderson of Japan. Love Fushi. So, yeah, that was my list.
Okay, well, my list is as follows, Stephen. And quite a surprise at number six, I think you'll find.
Oh.
It is Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, okay.
Who is a tremendous tag worker. In the Rockers for many, many years.
That's true.
87, 88, 89, 90, 91. I think that's a body of very strong work that he has there.
Mm. He had a good match teaming with God against the McMahons on pay-per-view, too.
So
did you ever see that?
Teaming with God, did you say?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
It was the main event of one of the pay-per-views was Vincent Shane McMahon versus Shawn Michaels and his tag partner of God. And basically it was just a 2-on-1 handicap match where they beat the crap out of him. But
oh, right.
They had this great entrance where like they had the holy music, and then Vince McMahon complains it wasn't a great entrance for God. So instead he like played jiggy music and there was like a spotlight coming. It was ridiculous.
What? When was that?
It was like, oh, I don't know, 2005, 2006. Vince McMahon did this great promo from inside a church where, like, Shane McMahon was, like, hiding because he thought Vince was going to be struck by lightning.
I'm really surprised that Shawn agreed to do that. I thought he was all Christian and stuff.
I don't know if I buy it.
Well, just, like, I'm really surprised that he'd be happy to go along with that. Seems sacrilegious to me, to be making fun of the Lord.
Well, he was his partner.
I don't know. I don't, like, can't imagine Ted DiBiase being up for that.
Well,
as the ordained minister.
Ted DiBiase is a man of the cloth more than I do Shawn Michaels.
There is that weird thing in wrestling, isn't there, about the conversions being gimmicked. Like, I don't particularly believe Jake Roberts, for example. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, I don't know. I think it's one carny business into another, to be honest.
Yeah, it is.
I'm an atheist, so I'm a little jaded, probably. So
it just seems convenient for some of them, that's all.
Yeah.
All right. My number five was Rick Martel.
Yeah.
Who, all the stuff you said about Dustin is, I would say, doubly true about Rick Martel. Tremendous hot tag, tremendous face in peril. Just like all-round complete tag worker. Best thing I've seen in the tag division in WF, and just really good. I don't want to dwell on this too much, Stephen, because it's completely off topic for us, but I've got a bit carried away here. And then number four, Now, you could decide to house rule Terry Funk on the basis that he's too much of a singles worker, even though he's... So if I can't have Terry Funk, I'd put Yatsu in there, because I think Yatsu, you could say, is a tag worker, right?
Well, Will had Kawada really high on his list, so you can...
Right, but I'm trying to go with this, like, not having singles. Like, I'm not putting Jumbo or Kawada or any of these guys. But Yatsu, I think, is primarily a tag worker and is the standout performer for me in lots of those 80s tags. So, yep. And then the top three, I think you'll probably guess them. Ricky Morton at number three.
Bobby Arn Anderson, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
There you go.
No-brainers. No-brainers. Yeah. So what are we doing next time? We've got some...
We have some more, July, September 96. So first, July 9th, Misawa Akiyama versus Kawada and Tawe, which might sound familiar. July 24th, Kobashi versus Tawe. And then two matches from September 5th, versus Stan Hansen versus Kobashi, which...
Stan Hansen, okay.
Yeah, and then the final match is the same as the final match from here, Misawa and Akiyama versus Williams and Ace from September 5th as well.
Great. Well, I look forward to
it. We actually have quite a lot of Misawa and Akiyama versus Williams and Ace matches coming up, so...
Now, which of the Akiyama matches is the famous one? There's a famous one coming up.
Yeah, that is the finals of the Tag League from 96. We're a couple shows from that.
Okay, well, quite a bit more 86 coming up, 96 coming up then. But why did we skip all the way from October 95 to June 96? Like, what happened in the start of 96?
I don't know. It was just the jump it went. I think I took all of, I think what I did was I took all of Charles's, 4.25-star matches and better, added the Gary Albright match, added any Wrestling Observer match of the years. And then, asked Charles and, Chad to make any changes and cut it down so it equaled out the amount of matches we needed, and it's just the way it worked out.
So according to them, I'm just having a look, like, that's a pretty big jump. That's like a 9-month jump.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering, like, so what, All Japan goes down during that period? Because that's like, I only say that because this is like right in the middle of the hot period for the promotion, right?
Well, and also I tried to equal out so that there wasn't like, because I think in total there was like 70 some matches. So I tried to make it so not all the matches came from like 95 and 96. So like there was a limit on both type of
thing. That makes sense.
Because we could have done like, you know, 6 shows on 95 and 6 shows on 96 and then like half a show on 98, you know.
I'm just having a little look at the sorts of matches that were going on. Like, so I'll just throw some out, okay?
Sure.
Kawada and Tawe taking on Stan Hansen and Gary Albright.
So?
So that was going on. That was in January. Kawada and Tawe taking on Stan Hansen and Gary Albright in the All Japan Excite series in February. So that was happening. So I'm wondering if the high instance of Gary Albright in these matches is why there's a big gap here, because there's a Misawa versus Kobashi that we're not watching. Kawada versus Tawe, both from the carnival. I guess earlier round matches. What else aren't we touching here? Just interested, you know. There's a 6-man tag. Misawa, Kobashi, and Akiyama taking on Kawada, Johnny Ace, and Gary Albright. So he was all over the place. He was in quite a lot of matches.
Well, I guess they brought him in from UWFI and they wanted to capitalize on it.
They wanted to. I'm wondering if he was actually the kind of long term replacement for Stan Hansen. If that was the thinking.
Well, it failed.
Because traditionally, you might think of Hansen in some of these spots, you know. And I know he's actually tagging with Albright sometimes, but you know, just interesting to see what else was happening. And then in May, where we were, there's well, we're back up to the matches that we were looking at. So, yeah, interesting. I'm surprised there's nothing from December 95, though, because that's usually when they have their big...
Tag League.
Yeah, so there wasn't a single match from the Tag League that year.
I guess none that were that jumped out enough.
Interesting. Well, I'm just having a look at the listings here, and there doesn't seem to be any on the yearbook either.
Oh, really?
Very surprised. Did they cancel the Tag League in 95?
No, they definitely had it.
Or do they do it early? There's no All Japan matches on the yearbook in November and December.
I'm going to pull up the Tag League from 95. Let's see what quality of teams there were here.
Very weird that there wasn't any...
I think it might have been a down tournament. Well, let's...
Or was it not aired, maybe? This footage thing? Cause
I remember seeing some of it at some point.
There's the October Giant series where we had Kobashi and Misawa versus Kawada and Tawe, 10-15-95.
Oh boy. Okay.
Right.
This tournament. Okay, I'll read from the 10th ranked team to the first ranked team.
Okay.
Okay. And this will probably end our show, but this is quite the tournament here. So we have Rob Van Dam and Johnny Smith. Number 10.
Okay.
Abdullah the Butcher and Kamala, number 2. Number 9.
Right. Abdullah in 95. Okay.
Yeah. So number 8 is Dory Funk Jr. and Masafushi.
Awesome team. Awesome team.
Maybe the oldest tag team in history. number 7 was Akiyama and Takeo Omori. Ooh. Yeah. 6 was Furnace and Crawford.
Good team.
Number 5, Giant Baba and Timon Honda.
Great. Yep.
Number 4, The Patriot and Johnny Ace.
What, that Patriot? the Patriot from WCW?
Yeah.
Okay.
Number 3 was Stan Hansen and Gary Albright.
Right.
2 was Misawa and Kobashi, and who ended up winning it, and then Kawada and Tawe.
You'd still expect there to be one match from that. From that tournament on the yearbook.
Yeah.
That seems bizarre.
The finals, you know, they went 24 minutes.
Weird.
On December 9th. So.
Well, mate, I'm sure there's an explanation. Oh, hold on. I found one. There was, look, Kobashi Misawa versus Kawada and Tawe from the Real World Tag League made it onto there. JDW says it bored me at the time. so even back in 95 they didn't enjoy it. So there we are. That's the only thing from that entire tournament that made it onto the yearbook,
so
it really must have been a down one. Isn't it weird to think that Dory Funk Jr. in 95 worked both ECW and All Japan? Just absolutely bizarre. And he must have been pretty old, so there we go.
Oh my god, check out this tag team on the finals of the tournament. You have Giant Baba, Stan Hansen, and Dory Funk Jr. as a six.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. The legendary team. I bet you the crowds who respect their elders in that country popped huge for that amazing team. So there we go.
Okay. I think it's time to end this.
until next time, guys, this is the All Japan Excite series.